Now, every time she entered the kitchen, she checked the refrigerator, just to be sure. No pictures of Lauren. She was in the right house. In case that didn't remove all doubt, John had written a note in big black letters and stuck it with a magnet to the refrigerator door. Alice, do not go running without me. My cell, 617-555-1122. Anna, 617-555-1123. Tom, 617-555-1124. John had made her promise not to go running without him. She'd sworn she wouldn't and crossed her heart. Of course, she might forget. Her ankle could probably use the time off anyway. She'd rolled it stepping off a curb last week. Her spatial perception was a bit off. Objects sometimes appeared closer or farther, or generally somewhere other than where they actually were. She'd had her eyes checked. Her vision was fine. She had the eyes of a 20-year-old. The problem wasn't with her corneas, lenses, or retinas. The glitch was somewhere in the processing of visual information, somewhere in her occipital cortex, said John. Apparently, she had the eyes of a college student and the occipital cortex of an octogenarian. No running without John. She might get lost or hurt. But lately, there was no running with John either. He'd been traveling a lot, and when he wasn't out of town, he left the house for Harvard early and worked late. By the time he got home, he was always too tired. She hated depending on him to go running, especially since he wasn't dependable. She picked up the phone and dialed the number on the refrigerator. Hello? Are we going for a run today? She asked. I don't know, maybe. I'm in a meeting. I'll call you later, said John. I really need to go for a run. I'll call you later. When? When I can. Fine. She hung up the phone, looked out the window, and then down at the running shoes on her feet. She peeled them off and threw them at the wall. She tried to be understanding. He needed to work. But why didn't he understand that she needed to run? If something as simple as regular exercise really did counter the progression of this disease, then she should be running as often as she could. Each time he told her, not today, she might be losing more neurons that she could have saved, dying needlessly faster. John was killing her. She picked up the phone again. Yes, asked John, hushed and annoyed. I want you to promise that we'll run today. Excuse me for a minute, he said to someone else. Please, Alice, let me call you after I get out of this meeting. I need to run today. I don't yet know when my day's going to end. So? This is why I think we should get you a treadmill. Oh, fuck you, she said, hanging up. She supposed that wasn't very understanding. She flashed to anger a lot lately. Whether this was a symptom of her disease advancing or a justified response, she couldn't say. She didn't want a treadmill. She wanted him. Maybe she shouldn't be so stubborn. Maybe she was killing herself, too. She could always walk somewhere without him. Of course, the somewhere had to be somewhere safe. She could walk to her office. But she didn't want to go to her office. She felt bored, ignored, and alienated in her office. She felt ridiculous there. She didn't belong there anymore. In all the expansive grandeur that was Harvard, there wasn't room there for a cognitive psychology professor with a broken cognitive psyche. She sat in her living room armchair and tried to think of what to do. Nothing meaningful enough came to her. She tried to imagine tomorrow, next week, the coming winter. Nothing meaningful enough came to her. She felt bored, ignored, and alienated in her living room armchair. The late afternoon sun cast strange Tim Burton shadows that slithered and undulated across the floor and up the walls. She watched the shadows dissolve and the room dim. She closed her eyes and fell asleep. Alice stood in their bedroom, naked but for a pair of ankle socks and her safe return bracelet, wrestling and growling at an article of clothing stretched around her head. Like a Martha Graham dance, her battle against the fabric shrouding her head looked like a physical and poetic expression of anguish. She let out a long scream. "What's happening?" asked John, running in. She looked at him with one panicked eye through a round hole in the twisted garment. "I can't do this. I can't figure out how to put on this fucking sports bra. I can't remember how to put on a bra, John. I can't put on my own bra." He went to her and examined her head. "That's not a bra, Allie. It's a pair of underwear." She burst into laughter. "It's not funny," said John. She laughed harder. "Stop it. It's not funny. Look, if you want to go running, you have to hurry up and get dressed. I don't have a lot of time." He left the room, unable to watch her standing there, naked with her underwear on her head, laughing at her own absurd madness.